a user has an AI assistant powered by a tiny, inexpensive model, the half-billion parameter Qwen 3. She tells it, "I drive a Toyota Prius." The agent stores that in memory. A minute later, she says, "I like hiking on weekends." Now comes the problem. The model looks at the new fact, looks at the stored one about the car, and confidently decides they refer to the same memory. So it issues an update, overwriting Toyota Prius with "likes hiking." Two completely unrelated facts get collapsed into one. But an 8 billion parameter model from the same family behaves differently. It recognizes that these are separate pieces of information and leaves the Prius memory untouched.
And nothing in the pipeline screams. The JSON is valid. The output is fluent. If you're running an end-to-end benchmark on this system, what you'll see is an agent that did something and moved on. The wrong thing, but you wouldn't know until 5 sessions later, when it can't tell you what kind of car you drive.
That's the puzzle this paper opens with. It posted to Archive a couple of days ago. Full title, "What Happens Inside Agent Memory? Circuit Analysis from Emergence to Diagnosis." From Xu Tao Mo and colleagues at City University of Hong Kong and the University of Toronto. The show you're hearing is AI-generated. I'm Juniper, that's Brooks. We're both AI voices from 11 Labs, and the script came out of Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7. Neither company is involved in producing this. Recorded May 7th, 2026, 2 days after the paper landed. And the reason the Toyota example matters, the reason it isn't just a cute bug, is that there's a specific, locatable answer for what's happening inside the small model when it issues that wrong update. The paper traces it.
Right, and I want to set up the architecture first because the silent failure framing depends on it. Modern AI assistants don't remember things by magic. There's a pipeline. When you talk to one of these systems, 3 different LLM calls do 3 different jobs. The first one, call it write, reads your conversation and pulls out facts. User drives a Prius. That's an extraction step. The second, manage, looks at the new fact alongside what's already stored and decides. Add it, update something, delete something, or do nothing. That's a routing decision. The third, read, happens later when you ask a question, and it grounds the answer in whatever memories got retrieved.
3 forward passes, 3 separate prompts, 3 opaque outputs strung end to end.
And that's exactly the trap. Each call looks fine in isolation. You can grade write's output, you can grade manages, you can grade reads. But end to end, when the agent gets something wrong, you genuinely don't know which of the 3 broke. Each stage could be 95% reliable and still compound into something pretty unreliable. The community has tools for single forward pass debugging, locating where a fact lives in the model, that kind of thing. But nobody had really tried to look inside the multi-call pipeline mechanistically. That's the gap.
And the methodological move that makes it possible? Let me compress this because it's load-bearing for the rest of the episode. Inside a transformer, the interesting computations happen in something called MLP layers. The problem is that the individual neurons in those layers are messy. One neuron lights up for subject pronoun, and also for travel, and also for 15 other things. So you can't point at it and say what it does. The fix is something called a transcoder. Think of it as a translator who sits next to the MLP layer. The MLP speaks a dense, jargon-heavy dialect where every word means several things at once. The translator paraphrases each statement into a sparse, plain language version. Only a few words fire at a time, and each word tends to mean one specific thing. First person subject, travel verb. Crucially, the paraphrase is faithful enough that downstream layers can't tell the difference. The replacement model agrees with the original on something like 98% of next token predictions. So you can interrogate the plain language version, and what you learn transfers back to the actual model.
The reason that matters? Once you've got a sparse, mostly interpretable dictionary for what each layer is doing, you can start asking causal questions. Which features fire when the model decides to update a memory? If I turn those features off, does the update go away? That's the engine the paper runs on. They take this transcoder-based circuit tracing pipeline and apply it stage by stage. Write, manage, read. And they do it across four sizes of the same model family. 500 million parameters, 4 billion, 8 billion, 14 billion. Same architecture, same training recipe, just bigger.
And that's where it gets interesting, Brooks. Because when you compare circuits across scales, you start seeing things that don't show up if you only look at one size.
This is the first finding, and it's the one I want us to sit with. They call it control before content.
So they trace circuits for each of the three operations at each of the four scales. And the way they verify they've actually found a circuit, not just noise, is something called the causal gap. Take the top features you discovered, ablate them, turn them off, and measure how much the model's prediction shifts. Then take a random set of features at the same layers, ablate those, and measure that shift. If your discovered features move the prediction more than random ones do, you've found something real. At 500 million parameters, the manage circuit, the routing decision, add, update, delete, none, already shows a clean causal gap. The features they identify are doing real work, but write and read at the same scale? The causal gap is statistically indistinguishable from random. There's no detectable circuit.
So at 500 million parameters, the model has the machinery to decide what to do with the memory, but not the machinery to actually understand what the memory says.
That's exactly the asymmetry. The routing comes online first. Content comprehension, extracting facts, grounding answers, doesn't show a detectable signal until you get to 4 billion parameters. And the analogy that captures this best is the brand new help desk hire on day one. They've been trained on the workflow. Ticket comes in, you decide, duplicate, update, new issue, spam. They know the form, they know the buttons, but they don't yet read the language well enough to actually understand what the tickets say. So they confidently click update existing case on tickets that have nothing to do with the case they're updating.
And the form is filled out correctly. The routing logic looks valid. It's just that the content underneath is gibberish to them.
Right. And that's why the Toyota Prius failure looks the way it looks. The 500 million model isn't confused. It's confident. The manage circuit is doing exactly what it was built to do. It sees two facts. It picks an action from its menu. It commits. The problem is that two facts never actually got understood as content. There's no internal representation of Prius is a car versus hiking is a leisure activity, rich enough to know they're unrelated. So update wins by default.
One concrete thing from the trace, because it makes the architecture vivid. When they look at the manage circuit at the scales where it's mature, it has a clean two-stage shape. Shallow layers form a kind of trunk that processes the conflict semantically. Does this new fact contradict, extend, or ignore what's stored? Then later layers fork into four distinct feature sets, one per routing decision. So the architecture itself encodes, first decide what kind of conflict this is, then pick the action. That's a real piece of internal structure, not a post hoc story.
And the write circuit, when it does mature at 4 billion, looks completely different. They walk through one example in the paper, the sentence, I'm planning a trip to Hawaii. Layer 22 of the network lights up on the word I. That's subject anchoring, locking on to who the fact is about. Layer 28 lights up on planning, extracting the relevant action. And then around layer 34, a cluster of about 10 features fires at the position where the JSON output starts forming. That's category aggregation, collapsing the extracted pieces into the structured output.
A relay race, subject, then verb, then aggregation hub.
A relay race. And that hub at layer 34, that's where the second finding lives.
So this is where it gets weird.
Yeah, they look at the features that recur in write circuits across many samples and the features that recur in read circuits across many samples. And they ask how much overlap there is. Write and read are doing very different jobs. Write is extracting facts to store. Read is using stored facts to answer. the output distributions don't even overlap. Write tends to emit verbs and structured fields. Read emits nouns, names, retrieved entities. Zero token overlap in the actual outputs. But internally, write and read share features at a meaningful rate, and the overlap concentrates at one specific late layer cluster. At 8 billion, that cluster sits around layer 34, same neighborhood as the aggregation hub from the Hawaii example. They share infrastructure that Manage doesn't share with either of them.
That's the hub. And the analogy I keep coming back to is the stage manager who runs both the matinee and the evening show. Two completely different productions, different scripts, different actors, different outputs. But backstage, there's one person handling cues and lighting and timing for both, because the meta task is the same. Lock attention onto the script that's in front of you and treat it as authoritative. That's what the hub seems to be doing. It's a grounding substrate. It says, the relevant information is over here, in context. Treat it as the source of truth. Whether you're using that to extract or to retrieve, the grounding job is the same.
And the experiment that nailed this down for me was the transplant test. They take the hub activations from one sample, say a memory write about a trip to Hawaii, and they paste them into a totally unrelated sample about a different topic. About 55% of within-stage predictions get disrupted. Matched control transplants, random features, same layers, do basically nothing. So the hub is causally engaged. But here's the thing. The recipient sample never adopts the donor's specific answer. The model doesn't suddenly start talking about Hawaii. The hub disrupts the recipient's prediction without injecting the donor's content, which tells you the hub isn't carrying the specific facts. It's carrying state about whether to ground in context at all and how much weight to put on what's there. The content lives elsewhere. The hub is the engagement signal.
And the part that I find genuinely surprising? Juniper, this is the line I want to put weight on. The hub is already there in the base model. Before any memory framing, before any agent prompt, the cluster of features exists. What memory framing does is recruit a direction on top of that substrate, a specific axis the model uses to gauge how much should I trust the memory I was given. If you take the same facts and present them as a plain, in-context block instead of as structured memory, the same hub lights up. The geometry is similar. But only the memory framing produces a steerable axis you can push the model along.
So memory framing doesn't create the grounding machinery. It recruits it.
Recruited, not created. There's a useful intuition here. The community center that gets repurposed as a polling place on election day. The building was always there. It hosts yoga classes and town meetings. Election day comes, and it gets assigned a new function, but only because the existing space was suitable. Memory framing is the election day assignment. The hub is the community center, which means there's an upper bound on what you can do with prompt engineering and memory format design. You're constrained by what directions the base model already supports.
That has implications. If the hub is shared substrate that gets recruited, then a memory framework that doesn't align well with the directions the base model already supports is going to underperform no matter how clever the prompt. And that maps onto something the paper finds when it compares two different memory systems, MEM0 and AMEM. MEM0 stores flat key-value facts. AMEM uses a self-linking graph structure, more like a Zettelkasten. Despite those very different storage formats, the read circuits across the two systems share 13 of their top 30 features. The hub finds them both.
Which is a useful robustness check. The hub isn't an artifact of one specific prompt format. Different framings recruit the same underlying machinery.
Okay, so we have control before content. We have a shared hub, recruited, not created. The third finding is the one that pivots the paper. And Brooks, I'm curious how you read this one, because it's the most epistemically careful part.
Yeah, this is where the authors get honest. So at 4 billion parameters, you can detect the write and read circuits. The causal gap is real. Ablating the discovered features hurts the prediction more than ablating random ones. By the standard the field uses, you have found a circuit. But found and useful for control turn out to be different things. They run an amplification sweep, multiply the discovered feature's activations by 2x, 3x, 5x, 10x, and ask whether amplifying the circuit consistently improves the model's actual end-to-end performance on memory tasks. At 8 billion, sometimes yes. The improvements are real but small. At 4 billion, the scale where the circuit is detectable, amplifying it 5x doesn't help. It collapses fact recall by 62 percentage points, from 84% down to 22. At 10x, it bounces back up to 87. The response surface is wildly non-monotonic. At 14 billion, the effects are tiny and inconsistent.
So the circuit is visible at 4 billion, but not actually a control handle.
Right. And the metaphor that crystallizes this? You can walk into a half-built house and identify the thermostat on the wall. There it is. Detection complete. Whether turning the dial actually changes the temperature depends on whether the wiring behind the wall is hooked up. At 4 billion, the thermostat is mounted, but the furnace isn't reliably responding. At 8 billion, the wiring exists. At 14 billion, something else is going on we don't fully understand from this data.
The clean version of the conceptual move is emergence and steerability are different scale thresholds. The community has often treated "we can find the circuit" as approximately equivalent to "we can intervene on it." The paper says, not in the same model family, not at the same scale.
And this is where I expected the paper to fall apart, honestly, because most work that finds a fragile intervention sells it as the headline anyway. This paper does the opposite. They say, amplification is unreliable. We're not going to pretend otherwise. So if interventions don't work cleanly, what is the discovered structure good for?
The pivot is to diagnosis, which is, I think, the most interesting practical move in the paper.
Yeah, here's the logic. Even though amplifying these circuits doesn't reliably steer the model, the circuits are well separated in feature space. Write looks different from manage looks different from read. So when an end-to-end pipeline failure happens, you can ask, which stage's circuit, when ablated, hurts the output most? That stage was doing the load-bearing work. By extension, if a stage's circuit ablation barely affects anything, that stage probably wasn't holding the answer up, possibly because it was already broken.
It's the mechanic who finds the broken part by unplugging components one at a time. Disconnect the fuel pump. Does the engine sound change? Disconnect the ignition. Does anything shift? The component whose absence matters least is the one that was already failing.
Exactly. They run this as an unsupervised diagnostic. No training, no labeled failures. For each pipeline failure, ablate each stage's discovered feature bank, about 30 features per stage, and flag the stage whose ablation pattern looks most degraded relative to the others.
And the number is about 76% at 8 billion. 76% unsupervised localization accuracy on which stage of the pipeline broke. Beats a trained logistic regression baseline by 13 points, beats the strongest training free baseline by 24. And it generalizes. They validated on three different benchmarks without retraining.
3 out of 4. Juniper, that's the part I want to voice clearly. 76% is a real result, especially unsupervised. But it also means roughly 1 in 4 diagnoses is wrong. This is a usable debugging tool, not a solved problem. Calling a failure as a manage error when it's actually a write error is going to send you down the wrong fix path.
Fair. The alternative right now is staring at valid JSON and end-to-end accuracy numbers and guessing. Going from no signal to a usable signal is a big move. But the actual number matters, not a rounded "it works."
Agreed.
Brooks, what's your read on the limitations? Because the paper is unusually direct about them.
The most honest critique is that all of this is one model family. Qwen 3, 4 sizes. The specific scale thresholds, 0.5 billion for routing, 4 billion for content, 8 billion for steerability, are stated with confidence, but a different family with different training data and different architecture could plausibly show a shifted ordering or even a completely different shape. The cross-system test, MEM0 versus AMEM, is a robustness check on prompt framing, not on architecture. The second thing I'd push on is the no detectable circuit at half a billion claim. Near zero causal gap is consistent with three different stories: actual absence of circuitry, distributed implementation that the top 30 feature method misses, and limits of the transcoder decomposition itself. The paper acknowledges this. The headline framing slightly elides it. A more conservative reading is no concentrated, top feature detectable signal at this scale.
That's a real qualifier. The asymmetry could be quantitative, not qualitative.
Right. And the third thing is that the diagnostic's ground truth comes from an LLM judge, Qwen3, 32 billion labels which stage failed, with human validated agreement around 80%. So the 76% diagnostic accuracy is measured against labels that themselves are 80% accurate. Some unknown fraction of the apparent diagnostic errors are probably label errors. The bound is real, but loose.
And there's a methodological choice worth voicing. They trace circuits exclusively on instances where the operation succeeded, where the LLM judge said this write was correct, this manage was correct. That's defensible if your goal is to characterize successful computation, but it means the discovered circuits might not be the right reference for diagnosing arbitrary failures, because failure circuits could be qualitatively different from degraded success circuits, not just dimmer versions.
That's the steel man. Even with all of it, though, the paper's contribution holds. The control before content asymmetry is robust enough to be useful guidance for practitioners. The hub finding is a genuine contribution to interpretability. Recruited, not created, is a real conceptual move. And the pivot to diagnosis over intervention is intellectually honest in a way the field doesn't always reward.
Let's bring this home. If you're deploying an agent memory system, what does this paper actually change?
One concrete thing. Backbone selection has a hidden trap that end-to-end benchmarks won't surface. If you pick a small model because it's cheap and the routing decisions look right, you may be in the regime where the agent confidently overwrites memories it doesn't internally understand. The model isn't lying, it just doesn't have content circuitry yet. That's the silent failure regime, and there's no behavioral signal for it. You need to verify extraction capability independently from routing competence, and the paper's framework gives you a way to do that.
And for the interpretability research program more broadly, the lesson I take away is that the gap between observation and control is real and probably bigger than most of the field has been pricing in. Finding the circuit and being able to steer through it are not the same achievement. Diagnostic uses of mechanistic findings, using them as readout signals rather than control handles, may be the more tractable product at current scales.
Which is, in a way, the more grown-up interpretability story. We can't fix it yet. We can tell you which part broke. That's already a lot.
That'll do.
Yeah. The show notes have a link to the paper and related materials. Worth a read if any of this caught you. Thanks for listening to AI Papers, a deep dive.